Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show we are looking at director Robert Wise and his horror classic The Haunting. Returning on the show today to talk about The Haunting is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So I think this is one of the greatest horror films ever made. I think it's definitely the best of the haunted house genre. And that's one of the oldest cliche. It's almost, even at this time, it was considered cliche to have like a haunted house. But I think this is definitely the best. And I know we talked just before we were talking, you were talking about how you don't consider it a horror film. So tell me a little bit more why you don't think this is a horror film.
You know, the whole idea of the haunted house story, what immediately comes to mind is Jane Eyre for me. And that's kind of a haunted house story. And there's a crazy lady in the attic. And it's a creepy story, but I wouldn't call it a horror movie. It's gothic, though. Wuthering Heights is gothic, and it has that sort of doomed lovers sort of a storyline, and there are some, you know, unsettling things that happen, and there seems to be some mental illness going on. But I don't think of that as a horror movie. I think of that as a thriller.
But this movie is like it does have the supernatural because
it is
ghosts. I think what's really interesting about this movie is you don't. Like, yes, it is haunted, but because of Nell's, you know, disturbed mind, you don't know how much of it is real and how much of it is just hallucinations. I think that's what's so brilliant about it. But there is paranormal stuff in the movie, so I do consider this a horror movie.
But the paranormal could be explained away as a way to explain her madness, the way to show her madness. Because this is I read the book, by the way.
Oh, you did.
The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. And I'm sure you're familiar with Shirley Jackson because she wrote the short story The Lottery, which almost every college student has read. And it's like, oh my God, they turned that into The Hunger Games, if you think about it. But she was very much a fan of Charlotte Perkins Gilman. Gilman Perkins, I think I got that backwards, who wrote this famous short story called The Yellow Wallpaper, which is about a woman who loses her mind and ends up sort of being absorbed by the yellow wallpaper in her house. And there have been a lot of people writing about how that has to do with postpartum depression and all these other kinds of things.
Yeah, I remember that one too. We had to read that in high school.
So this story sort of reminded me of the yellow wallpaper and Jane Eyre. It's like the house is embodying something, but it's really what's going on in her head, or is it?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You talk about the yellow wallpaper. Was that any way influenced by The King in Yellow, or did that influence The King in Yellow?
Not that I know of, but I'm not familiar with The King in Yellow.
It was a collection of short stories in like the 1890s written by this guy named Robert Chambers. And in the stories, they're all connected around this play called The King in Yellow. And it's supposedly anyone who reads this play will turn them insane. Something like
interesting.
That.
Interesting. Have you read the play?
Well, the thing is that they just show snippets of the play.
It's not a real play. Too dangerous.
Yeah, because like, you can't read it or else you'll go mad. And it heavily influenced, if you watch the first season of True Detective, there's a lot of influences from that book in that whole series. But it's a good read.
Well, that's an interesting, I'll look for that.
But we talk about it. It's unsettling just because you don't know. Is this more of her just being crazy or is this like actual haunting stuff?
Well, look at this movie next to like Psycho. That house in Psycho was sort of a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And again, a crazy lady in the attic, or is she in the fruit cellar? And it's when you find out later, most of the stuff you thought was happening in the house isn't happening at all. It's all in the guy's mind. So I think that's another way to look at it. And I don't know that I would have called Psycho a quote-unquote horror movie either because it's more suspense. But I don't know. What do you think?
That's where you and I differ, I think, on our definitions of horror. Because I think you kind of feel that a horror movie has to have something of the supernatural, like ghosts.
It has to have a half-dead body coming out of the grave, reaching out for you with one skeletal hand.
Ghosts, zombies, demons. Like, okay, yeah, those are classic staples of the horror genre, or the unkillable monster,
like a
Jason or a Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger. But not, there are a lot of good horror, or witches, too. You could throw in witches. But I think horror movies can just be anything that builds a creepy atmosphere. It's unsettling. Like, I think people can be just as creepy or scary as a ghost or a demon. And I think even the example we talked about with The Vanishing.
Yes.
That scene at the end, pretty darn terrifying.
Yes.
And there's no ghosts or zombies in that movie. I just think you can have even something like look at a horror movie called, you know, look at a horror movie this year, Get Out.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing paranormal or, I mean, I guess maybe if you can say that they're, you know, putting themselves in black people's bodies. But like any everything else, it's people. And I think that movie is creepy as mm-hmm. heck. It makes me scared of going to rich white people's houses. It's like that's a horror movie for me. But like, would you say Get Out is a horror movie?
I know it's billed as a horror movie, but I don't think of it as a horror movie. I think it is a really well done suspense mm-hmm. movie with a horrifying idea mm-hmm. in it. You're right, though. People can be much worse. People do terrible things. You're right. Mm-hmm. People are horrifying.
And that's one of my biggest beefs with horror movies today, because you anytime you go to a theater and it's around Halloween time, so we're probably going to see this if we go into theaters now. It's some, you know, it's going to be a bunch of like exorcism movies, you know, where mm-hmm. they have to get a demon out or some sort of demon, or there's going to be ghosts, so it'll be a found footage movie with, you know, and you know they look back and like somebody's glass gets knocked over or a door opens or just, you know, something like the Paranormal Activity number 5000 or whatever they're on now, you know, something like that. Like I wish they would get away from that and focus on other types of horror movies, because even something like another movie I really like this year was called It Comes at Night, which, okay, there is supposedly this worldwide like infection, some sort of disease that I think turns people into zombies or something, but you never see the zombies, and that's what's really good. It's all just people, and I think it just shows how, you know, the fear of, you know, fear and paranoia can lead people to do horrible things.
And yet I don't think of even the most graphic movie about World War II or the Holocaust as being a horror movie.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that, because those are sort of real life events. They are based on something.
But it's people doing terrible things to other people, unspeakable things, like mm-hmm. monstrous things. But I still don't think that is a horror movie.
No, I don't either.
It has to be more than just the topic's horrifying.
Oh, well, I think it's just maybe somebody's just going mad. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a, you know, somebody goes insane or there's something they've uncovered and they're just terrified of it. And there's somebody who's trying to stop them. That's sort of what I would, you know, see. Even something like I just recently watched both versions of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original one from the 50s and then the later one with Donald Sutherland. And that's a terrifying movie. You know, granted, it's aliens and stuff, but, you know, it's there's no monsters or anything. It's mostly just people who just turn into these things. And when they turn into them, you don't really know when it exactly happens.
You know, we should maybe discuss The Birds in terms of a horror movie.
That's a good one, too.
Because to me, that's a horror movie, because it has an unexplained supernatural phenomenon and gore mm-hmm. and a sort of an evil intent to mm-hmm. the perpetrating birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like we talk about this movie, I actually like this movie because it's not gory at all. In fact, mm-hmm. it's PG. It's terrifying, but it's just PG, and there's absolutely no blood or guts or anything. I mean, only person who dies is just in a car accident. You don't see anything. And I think that's what's so great. And I think what really makes this movie terrifying is I think the cinematography is just one of the best examples of you could find in a horror movie.
Beautifully shot.
And like I like how they talk about how purposefully the house is at the kind of these off-kilter angles and everything, so you can just go at it with all these Dutch angles in the film. And like a lot of the wide angle shots when, you know, when she wakes up at night and it's the pounding on the mm-hmm. door and all the sounds, and it like has the wide angle shots right at the door. Like that one gives you that kind of off kilter, something isn't right feeling throughout most of the film.
You know what else it reminded me of is Rebecca of mm-hmm. Manderley and of Mrs. Danvers, mm-hmm. you know, just sort of the spooky presence who, you know, remembers the past and is always, you know, hovering or whatever. Mm-hmm. It reminded me very much of that. That house seemed like it had its own personality.
Yeah, it has that, you know, like they say in the house, it was, from the beginning, it was a house that was born bad. And you
yes.
can just always feel that it's always going to, whenever you go in there, you're doomed. You know,
interestingly, the house is a real building.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but the interior is all studio. And that door mm-hmm. is a rubber door.
The one that was breathing?
Yes. Yeah, they actually have, like, techs on the other side of it pounding on it.
Cool.
And they were trying to come up with ideas for, you know, how to get this book made into a movie. And one of the script ideas was to have it all turn out that everybody there is actually an inmate in a hospital for the insane, sort of a Caligari kind of twist. Okay. And then Shirley Jackson, who was involved in the screenplay, said, "Yeah, that's not the story. That's not what's going on with the story." But she has a really interesting backstory. She was a very prolific writer, did very well, kind of outshone her husband in a way. I think they had 4 children. But, you know, a lot of her writing has to do with these ideas of, like, the house. And the house in this story sort of represents the main character's, Eleanor's mother. You know, so it's sort of womb-like. So there's even a scene in the movie where she's kind of squirming around in the house. I thought they kind of maybe threw that in there to... Make that imagery more emphatic.
Yeah, there's a lot of terrifying imagery in the film, not only with, like, you know, the door breathing, making this house feel more like a living person, but even this scene that I, you know, it's just the scene when, you know, she's walking up those stairs.
The stairs.
Yeah, which is terrifying itself, but when she gets up, and you're thinking, oh, it's okay now, and then out of nowhere, the wife appears, and she's just like, ah. That gets you jumping. That gets you to jump.
It does. What do you think of the spiral staircase scene? Because they said it was terrifying to be on it because it was really shaky.
Yeah, that's definitely a creepy scene just because you're wondering when she's going to fall. And even like it gets you the edits of the, you know, the bolts coming out from the wall, knowing that they can't support her weight.
Yeah.
And I think that it shows how, now Robert Wise, we could talk a little bit of background about him. Now, we'll get more into his directing career, but when he started out, he was an editor. And one of the, you know, it's hard to get a better editing job on your first film than a Citizen Kane.
Yeah, that's a nice way to start.
He worked a lot with Orson Welles early in his life, and you can see how his use of, you know, his work as an editor affected this movie, because there's a lot of just quick, rapid cuts. You know, and, you know, there's a scene when she's out on one of the balconies, and she's looking up at the window, I think, when... when one of the people died, she's looking, and all of a sudden, like, quick zoom, cut to her, and she just falls down. It's very rapid. I think that's just, once again, really good editing. It keeps you uneasy and off guard throughout the movie.
He's great at creating the mood in this movie. I agree. It's funny that they remade it, because he did say once that he didn't like to do remakes because you have to watch the original movie. And then, you know... As source. And then when you find yourself setting up like the same sort of shot, you find yourself remembering the first movie.
Yeah, and you actually talk about remakes. This film was remade in 1999, and it's considered one of the worst remakes. I watched a bit of it. It is not scary at all, and it basically, the Julie Harris character, she turns into like this, she has this supernatural connection with the house, so she gathers all these forces to fight against this evil ghost, and it's just... awful. If you want to see a good like takedown of that movie, go to YouTube and look up the Nostalgia Critic's review of it. Like, he compares, because he had a lot of love for that, the original. He talks about just how this undoes everything that was great about the original.
Did they use the money and technology to make it more, you know, okay?
There's a lot of CGI and stuff. Okay. It's all,
is that done well?
No, it looks really bad.
I didn't bother with the remake.
Yeah, I don't bother. It's awful. And then now, it's interesting, we talk about Julie Harris a lot, the Claire Bloom's character, and I'm pretty sure, you know, it's implied that she's a lesbian, right?
Right, and in fact, one of the screenplay ideas that they had showed her backstory a little bit, and they show that, you know, she obviously had just been dumped by a woman, because you see scrawled on the mirror in lipstick, "I hate you." But then they wanted to take that out because, again, Shirley Jackson said, yeah, that's not really the emphasis. It's not really about lesbianism. That just happens to be, it just looks like it. She said this a lot because it kept coming up. But I think it's kind of like Mrs. Danvers. You know, there needs to be sort of that sexual electricity.
Yeah, because she does, I'm pretty sure she's attracted to Nell, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's these scenes like, well, you know, if you get scared, you can come into my room and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, and other performances in the film that stick out to you? I mean, I would like to go back again to Julie Harris, because I think she plays that character very well, because it builds up her up at the beginning, like when she had that, you know, she was forced to take care of her mother, you know, because her mother was an invalid, and it sets it up with the connection to the story in the house of the invalid woman who died because her the person who was taking care of her was fooling around with her boyfriend. She didn't really pay attention to her. So you build up that, like, sort of perfectly builds up how her the house is sort of using her and her past to, you know, drive her insane.
Yeah, I love Julie Harris. I've seen her in lots of things. She's actually more known for stage work. She made a couple of really good films, one of which, of course, is East of Eden with James Dean. And then she went back to the theater and really never looked back. But she's great at playing the sort of every woman, because there's something very vulnerable about her, especially in the beginning when you see, you know, how ill-used she is by her sister and her family. And then she kind of recreates sort of the sister relationship with Theodora. Mm-hmm. And Theodora, by the way, one interesting thing about that character is to make her look, you know, more kind of beatnik-like, they had her costumes done by Mary Quant.
Who's Mary Quant?
She was a big deal for being a famous beatnik clothing designer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's British.
Okay.
So she designed all, you know, mod clothing, you know, just for Claire Bloom.
Mm-hmm. And going back to that, you know, the implied lesbianism character in the remake, it's Catherine Zeta-Jones, and she's being much more forward with her advances on the who plays the woman. And it's, you're killing the, you know, and the nostalgia critic says the only way you can make this more obvious if you name her first name was Liz and her last name was Bean.
That's a good one. Now about Julie Harris, she said when she goes back and looks at the movie now, she wishes that she looked odder. She said, I don't even know what I mean by that, but I just feel like she just looks so ordinary. She feels like she looks too ordinary. And she wanted to just look a little more offbeat, you know, like have her appearance make her look like maybe she wasn't all there. But I think the plainness of her is what makes it work.
Yeah, because you can tell she's been very kept up. Like she said, this is the first vacation I've ever had in my life. You can sell, you know, she sort of even acts a little bit, you know, childlike in a lot of scenes because she's never really gone out and done anything in her life because she's been too busy taking care of her mother her whole life and sort of just the effect that's had on her. And like she said, you know, and I would say, I want your opinion on one thing. With the one flaw I have in this movie is just the constant voiceover narration from Julie Harris's character. Like just it's basically her telling you instead of showing you what she's thinking and what's going on in her mind. And I think that was too much and it was overkill. It's like, we don't need that. You're already doing a good job telling us. And if there's one flaw I have in this movie, it's that.
It is talky in that way, but I thought it was sort of film noirish to have the voiceover. And also because you're thinking maybe she's talking to herself like all the time, which kind of gives you that idea that, you know, maybe she's not quite all there. Two great quotes from Julie Harris about her appearance. She said, pictures make me look like a 12-year-old boy who flunked his bodybuilding course. Love that one. And also, if I had a bosom, I could rule the world.
But even talk about it with her character. I thought, you know, her costume design, it make you feel she even looks like a kid. You know, she looks like a little girl with like her, you know, the pajamas she wears and the clothes she wears and everything. She doesn't really look like, she looks more like a child than an adult.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with, you know, kind of the house is somehow her mother. She even calls it mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is sort of an infantilizing thing that happens with her. She does become childlike.
Okay. And I'd like to talk about, I talked about how the influence this had. And one of the things was we talked about this, you know, the really great cinematography. And I love the kind of the use of the wide angle shots and the Dutch angles. This was the first time I've seen this movie in a while. The last time I saw it, I hadn't seen the Evil Dead trilogy. And then now, after I've seen the Evil Dead trilogy now many, many times, I'm seeing like, oh, that's where he got it. And that's not a knock on Raimi. I'm a big Sam Raimi fan who directed those movies. Well, you can tell just like even because in the movie, have you seen the Evil Dead?
No.
I figured. But anyway, it's they go to the, you know, a bunch of college kids go to this cabin in the woods. They find this, you know, this book where, you know, it's called the Necronomicon, so the Book of the Dead. So they awaken all these evil spirits that attack the house. But in that, like the like in this movie, a lot of Dutch angles, you hear a lot of, you know, all these weird sounds pounding on the doors. You know, a lot of it's kind of these wide angle shots with people going crazy. You know, there's one of the famous shots in the second one is when Bruce Campbell, the house is just driving him crazy, and it's a wide angle shot of him close up, and he's just laughing with a gun. He's like, ha ha ha. It, like you can tell just where he got a lot of that from. Once again, it's influence, not copying, but you can definitely see it.
You know, the book goes into a couple of things that don't come up. I mean, obviously you can't put everything in the movie, but the two girls when they were growing up, one of who becomes Julie Harris, their mother has always felt extremely persecuted by the neighbors. And there's this description of, for some reason, as she describes it in a childlike way, it was raining rocks, like rocks just coming down from everywhere. It turns out, you know, when you look at it a few pages later, you realize their neighbors were throwing rocks at them for days. There was something about them that they really wanted to drive out. So when she gets to the haunted house and then you start hearing knocking and things like that, I don't know, does that not seem like the rock incident revisited in a larger scale?
So it's more of, you know, is this
memories and
is this more in her head or past causes of her past experience?
Exactly.
Or is the place actually haunted? But even like even that part, it kind of makes you doubt, because then why is Claire Bloom getting so scared? Because it seems like she's hearing this too.
Right. And she even says, you know, how are these people hearing these things that are only in my head? It's a great question. But there's, you know, also the unanswered question of whose hand was she holding?
Yeah, whose hand? That's another great scene.
It's a great scene.
Because it's building you up, because you're not seeing Claire Bloom. And she's like, well, you're almost crushing my hand. Then you throw up. She's like in a different bed. And like, whoa.
Again, Jane Eyre. There's a really early scene where the young girl is growing up in a, I guess it's a boarding school or reform school or something. And she makes a really good friend. I think it's even Margaret Hamilton, a young Margaret Hamilton. Anyway, the two girls are asleep. The one girl is actually very ill, and the opening scene in the morning is, you know, she realizes she's been holding this dead white hand all night long. Yeah, real creepy stuff.
Mm. Which version of Jane Eyre is that?
Oh,
I know there's like 100 of them.
I'll have to look up the actual date of the one. It's one I consider the classic.
Okay. You know, and we could, as we now start talking about Robert Wise, and, you know, I think he's never talked about as one of the great directors. Yet when you look at his IMDb, it blows you away.
So, I know. Sound of Music.
Sound of Music.
West Side Story.
This movie, Day of the Earth Stood Still.
The Star Trek movie.
Oh, people don't really care for
that. I know,
but
it's so diverse. I mean, how do you handle horror? Because we'll give that horror. Science fiction, musicals.
Even like, you know, epic war movies with a film called The Sand Pebbles with Steve McQueen. He'd even did, like, I even have a couple of old noirs he did back in the day. One was called The Setup, which is really good. And it's just like, man, that guy could do anything.
He could do anything.
I think maybe just because he didn't have a distinct, you know, he didn't stay within one genre, like a Hitchcock or something. That might have hurt him, so nothing really stands out. But I think when we talk about directors all the time, we talk about how, you know, there's always a style, like, you know, Hitchcock obviously has a style. You know, there are other directors that have a certain style. Like, he doesn't have a style, but that's not a knock, because he can really do any kind of movie and make it good. And, you know, can, like in this film, great use of editing and cinematography. Nothing, sure, there's no distinct style or camera move or character motif or something you see in a lot of his films, but that doesn't mean he's a bad director. Quite the opposite.
Very, very versatile. I would say his contemporary today would be Ang Lee, because every time you see an Ang Lee movie, it's always amazing, but it's not like the last one you saw.
Yeah, it is. Once again, it's like Ang Lee, because, you know, martial arts film, superhero film, romantic film, like a spy.
Gay romantic film,
spy drama, kind of a
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen, a family drama. The guy, guy can do anything.
Like, he can do anything.
If there's a contemporary from his age, I would say I think it's Joseph Mankiewicz, the one that did The Lady Eve, because he did that. He did a film noir called No Way Out. He did The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, which I really liked. He did a bunch of other films, kind of different genres and things. No style that sticks out to you, but still really good and really versatile.
And maybe even Billy Wilder, although his movies have a little bit of his stamp on them. But
yeah, I would say that. Like, when you watch The Apartment and Some Like It Hot, or even The Fortune Cookie, you can kind of tell that's a Billy Wilder film.
But Some Like It Hot is not like Double Indemnity.
But, like, I think with Wilder, it's sort of like there's two different stages in his career, because you have like the really dark early career. Like you can, sure, maybe not Double Indemnity and Some Like Hot, but you can tell Double Indemnity or Sunset Boulevard or Ace in the Hole, you can tell that's the same director.
And you know when you're watching a Coen Brothers movie or a Scorsese movie, so, you know, some directors you definitely know what you're getting.
Definitely, but, you know, once again, I think he proves that you can not have a distinct style, yet still be really, really good.
And I think it's because he comes at it with an editor's eye.
Mm-hmm. I think he probably picked up a lot of it, you know, a lot of that from Orson Welles working with him. And I think he just was, once he left, he was able to take it to himself, bring it to himself.
Yeah, very talented guy.
So, other great haunted house movies that you like? I know. Two I want to bring up. Poltergeist, I've seen that movie countless many times. Not, you know, it's not like an old haunted house, it's just basically some like suburban house and that just happened to be buried on built on an Indian burial ground. That's one I really like. And also, I talked about this with Dutter on another show we're doing. It's called The Old Dark House. That was directed by James Whale, who did the early Frankenstein movies and The Invisible Man. That one also has Boris Karloff in it. It's a really good movie too. Those two I would recommend. Any for you?
Well, I mentioned Jane Eyre and the Bates Motel, and maybe something came to mind. I'm trying to think where it went. It'll come back to me.
The Innocents?
See, I'm not as well versed as you are in horror films, so I'm thinking of movies where the house was a character.
Another one I'd probably say is, have you seen The Others with Nicole Kidman?
Yes, that's a great example. That is a really good example.
Okay. Got to get you to watch more horror movies.
Well, you know, if they're going to be psychological, like thrillers like this, I'm all over that. I just, I'm just not into that skeletal hand reaching out of the undead grave.
I'll have to make you watch the Evil Dead movies now.
I'll try one. How's that?
All right. So getting close to the end of my questions, is there anything else I haven't brought up or talked about that you want to bring up now?
I think you mentioned you wanted to talk a little bit about Julie Harris and the depression she suffered when she was making the film.
Oh, yeah. Like, she actually suffered, it plays well in her performance because I guess she was suffering depression during the filmmaking.
I think some of that was self-inflicted because she also made a point of not getting close to any of her co-stars. And they thought, you know, she was very standoffish. And they thought maybe she just thinks that she's slumming because she's really a stage actress and here she is doing this movie. But it turns out at the end, she told them at the end of filming that she was just trying to stay in character. And she figured if she got to be friendly with everybody, then she wouldn't be able to project that sense of being an outsider and Smart. How nobody would be friends with her. So that's why she did it that way. But it ended up making her feel worse.
I didn't know she... complained that she felt that the other actors weren't taking the film as seriously as she did.
Yeah, well, I think also that might be because she is coming from the stage. Her, you know, process and commitment to the craft
would be acting the theater. All right, then. So then, last question I'll have for you is just tell us a little bit about the classes you have.
I don't have any class where this movie would fit in, except to say, look at these great shots by this really amazing director. But now that I've seen it, I definitely think I want to mention it in classes where we talk about houses and how they're used as a foreboding set.
All right. Next movie will be Friday the 13th, part like 7.
Oh my God. I'm never going to sleep again.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Robert Wise and his 1963 classic, The Haunting. Don't forget you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Pastor West, everyone, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
Right. For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying it was an evil house from the beginning, a house that was born bad.